Well, as a coach in the NBA, getting a lot of these young guys that were just 1 year removed from high school, I should say, I guarantee you most coaches across the board would say that as extremely talented and athletic as these young guys were, they still weren't ready to play. There were still some pieces that were missing because they didn't get the experience that most of us did that you get when you go through 4 years of college.
That's the voice of Coach Brian Shaw on what happens when young basketball stars do just 1 year of college and then struggle when they go pro. But now Shaw is coaching a new G League team that's also an experiment with elite prospects right out of high school. And ESPN's top draft analyst got an exclusive up-close look at how it's threatening to reroute the pipeline of top talent to the NBA. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Thursday, January 28th. This is ESPN Daily. Mike, thank you for joining me today.
Pablo, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Mike Schmitz travels the world to scout potential NBA draft picks for ESPN. So the G League Ignite concept is this sort of grand experiment, Mike, that the NBA is undertaking right now, and it seeks to answer at least one big key question. How would you describe what that question is?
What is the best development for an elite prospect during their draft eligible year? I think from the league standpoint, you know, they were starting to see players like LaMelo Ball and RJ Hampton, you know, go out to New Zealand and Australia and go that route as opposed to college. So I think the league wanted to find a way to make sure that the top prospects who don't want to go the college route can stay home and be kind of under the NBA umbrella with NBA coaching, NBA development, and just make sure that they enter the league as prepared as possible.
And it's worth mentioning, Mike, that the G League Ignite program has a very different ownership model from the rest of the league. It's collectively owned by the league itself as a whole. And its whole reason to exist is as this proving ground for these young top prospects in particular.
Yeah, so, you know, your typical G League teams are a one-to-one type of setup where, you know, you have your Los Angeles Lakers and then your South Bay Lakers, obviously. And so it's a good place for the young players on the NBA teams who maybe aren't getting as much run to come on down and stay fresh, and then also try to, you know, develop some under the radar talent that could maybe play at the next level. But the G League Ignite team has multiple NBA draft prospects on it, combined with some NBA veterans. So it's this hodgepodge, mishmash, whatever word you want to use, of basketball players from all different walks of life. So, you know, you have Jalen Green, who is this internet superstar who has over a million Instagram followers, was once the number one player in his class, and is a projected top three pick. Jonathan Kuminga, who's originally from Congo, was another big name high school recruit. He was a top five player in his class and a potential top five pick. And then you have the NBA vets. So you have Amir Johnson, Jarrett Jack, Bobby Brown, who's a guard from California, who's played in like every single country you could imagine, from, you know, Montenegro to Greece to China. He's been all over. And then you have some kind of mid-20s guys. So it's certainly a challenge for head coach Brian Shaw to, you know, make all of this work. But from everything I saw, you know, they're doing everything they can down there in Walnut Creek. They're all up there training for the G League bubble. I drove up 6 hours to watch those guys, and I kind of weaseled my way into their bubble after quarantining and testing just to get a look at, you know, this new project up there.
So all of that is to say, Mike, that you have had a pretty unique vantage point that scouts, teams around the league presumably are quite jealous of, because you actually got to meet and talk to those top prospects in question. What's your sense, before we get into how they looked on the court, why they decided this project, this experiment, was right for them?
I think it's a few different things. You know, obviously the ability to, you know, start making money for your family, like you mentioned earlier. I mean, that's a part of it, right? You know, Jalen Green, Jonathan Kuminga expected to make, you know, upwards of $500,000. So to be able to do that and then go learn from NBA veterans and NBA coaches, I think was really, really interesting to them. You know, Jalen Green had told me, you know, for him, it's very important to be different and be kind of a trailblazer and to chart his own path. And I think that certainly played a role. Now, I'm sure it's been difficult at times to watch, you know, Jalen Suggs at Gonzaga, the number one team in the country, on ESPN every night and solidifying himself, you know, as a top five prospect. Whereas these prospects with the Ignite pretty much remain relative unknowns. But, you know, I think they're trying to see the silver lining here. There's going to be a lot of stock put into this bubble just because no one's really seen these guys yet in person.
So all of that changes in February, Mike, when the G League bubble starts in earnest, and it's going to be in Disney World, in Orlando, not unlike how the NBA pulled off its bubble. And at that point, scouts and executives, they can all fly in to see them play in person under NBA supervision. And the one player who has been getting the most attention so far is Jalen Green. And I got to say here, I've been aware of Jalen Green for a while now, simply because I've been waiting for a Filipino-American basketball messiah, Mike. And that may well be Jalen Green. He might be the number one overall pick in next year's draft. But just help me size him up here for those who don't know his name and his story. Where was he coming out of high school? What's he likely going to be striving for this particular season in that bubble?
Yeah, Jalen Green has been on the radar really since he was 14 years old at USA basketball camps. I think we first interviewed him in October of 2016.
We're here with Jalen Green at the USA Basketball Junior National Team Camp. Jalen, how's Colorado Springs treating you so far?
You know, it's treating me good. It's cold. Yeah, that's different because they're fresh.
And it's funny looking back at that interview because he's like, man, I want to go to Kentucky.
Hope to be at like high D1 school, like Kentucky or something like that, because that's my dream school. So.
That's my dream school. I'm going to be a small forward. And now he's this like ultra athletic 6'6 combo guard. But he's a projected top three pick, you know, for a reason. I mean, I would call him the most exciting prospect in this draft. One NBA scout explained him athletically as just having million-dollar legs. So he has that ability, but he also has really, really improved his skill level. I mean, when I was down there for the 3 days that I saw, he was really shooting the ball well. He can handle it. He's improving as a passer. And for him, I think a benefit to all this playing with pros has been really learning how to defend. The veterans had kind of not an inside joke, but like their own play, and they would just call baby. And you heard it a few times when I was out there, and you would hear baby, baby, baby. And the play was basically to put Jalen Green on the block and to test him and say, hey, we're going to go at you. And Jalen Green didn't pick up on it for a little while there. And then when he did, it was all laughs and all smiles.
They call you baby?
Baby. Yeah, you heard about that. Yeah. I caught on it till like they was just running this play where they came put me in a post every time. They called it baby. But
just trying to take advantage
of
it.
Yeah, but I walled up, so. I didn't let them do that. They know I'm strong. I don't know why they do that, but...
You like the challenge?
I like the challenge. I love to compete.
He's getting tested in the post, guarding a G League veteran like Reggie Hearn, who's 11 years older than him, and really being challenged. And that's what's going to happen in the bubble against a lot of these pros. But I'm a huge fan of his upside, and he's one of those guys who could roll out of bed and give you 30 points.
Yeah, I feel like it's not a good sign, Mike, when your opponents are strategizing against you using the chorus of a Justin Bieber single in general. Like, not necessarily the best, but I want to come to understand the other three guys here who are involved and their top prospects themselves. And that's Todd, that's Nix, that's Kuminga. Give me the thumbnail sort of note summary on what we should know about them.
Yeah, Kuminga has been kind of the pleasant surprise of the whole group, to be honest. I mean, the more you talk to people down there, they're it's no knock against Jalen Green. It's more like this kid has been arguably our best prospect on a day-to-day basis. Just as a 6'8" wing who guards multiple positions, is supremely athletic, can make an open shot, can handle the ball a little bit. You know, he moved from Congo to the U.S. when he was 14 years old. He played at, I believe, 4 different high schools. He jumped all around and really needed something like this, honestly, to like be able to just kind of sit down and focus strictly on basketball. And that's what, you know, what he's done. And then the other two, just some, you know, quick facts on him. Isaiah Todd from Baltimore originally, he was ranked number one in his class very early on. And I think it was just a lot coming at him, you know, very quickly. And so he had some struggles toward the latter half of his high school career, but super talented, was actually originally committed to Michigan and then decided to go this route. So he could solidify himself, you know, as a draft pick if he plays well. And then the last one is Dacian Nix. He was originally committed to UCLA, was going to go that route, and then had a change of course, went to the G League Ignite. And he's a 6'5" point guard. He can really, really pass, improving shooter. He's kind of a fringe first round pick.
So when these guys get on the court and you've been able to watch them in practice and scrimmages, you've gotten a front row seat to them. They are in this ecosystem that is unprecedented, certainly in the basketball economy, but also specifically for them because they're going up against like adults here. What's the biggest adjustment they've had to make after coming off of, you know, competition in high school?
Yeah, I think it's learning how to play with other good players. You know, in high school, it's Jalen Green, here's the ball, go do what you do, right? And so they need to figure out, how do I add value when I don't have the ball in my hands? All those little things that it usually takes players some time once they get to the NBA to adjust to that style of play. So they're certainly learning that. I think they're learning a routine, how to take care of their bodies. You know, they've had some presentations and some Zoom speakers come in. And the one that I was able to sit in on was from one of the leading kind of sleep science doctors in her field. She was telling them all about the importance of sleep, the science of sleep, basically showing graphs of here's 5 years of data and players that have been tweeting after 11 p.m., this is their field goal percentage. And versus other players who haven't been tweeting, this is their field goal percentage.
How did the players react when they were presented with this information about what late night tweeting can do for their on-court performance?
I think there was some laughter, you know, and thankfully they all stayed awake during the presentation. I was thinking like, okay, if one of these dudes dozes off during this sleep presentation, then, you know, that would be interesting to say the least. You know, some of them are gamers, so I think you have your late night crowd. You know, sometimes walking into the gym every morning to their socially distanced setup, you see them a little bit sluggish. And I think a lot of that is just from being a teenager, you know, and living on their own for the first time.
All right, Mike, after the break, I want to ask you how and why this whole experiment itself might be one and done.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
So the hurdles these young players are facing, Mike, I want to follow up on that because how different is this G League experience versus what they might have had as a freshman in college?
It's different. It's definitely different. I mean, it's hard to argue against the merits of playing 30, 35 games that are competitive alongside, you know, players your age against players your age. You clearly benefit from that, and that prepares you, you know, for the NBA, just playing in kind of those pressure packed moments where, you know, you have to value every single possession. And if you don't, you're hearing from Coach K about it. You're hearing from Tom Izzo about it. You're hearing from John Calipari about it. But it's different in terms of the level of competition, the style of play. I mean, they're 24-second shot clock, NBA ball, NBA style offense, NBA terminology that you don't always see at the college level. And then just the facilities obviously are different. I mean, if you go to Duke or Arizona or Kentucky, you know, a lot of these places have their own practice facility. They have their own film room. They have a big locker room. They're the big man on campus, obviously. There's certainly trade-offs in each direction.
The adults they're playing with, the grown NBA vets, the guys who are maybe 37 years old, as is the case of Jarrett Jack, these guys have obviously seen it all as pros themselves. What's that dynamic like inside of this team? Because I imagine, look, we've spent a lot of time talking about those four prospects. There's a lot of hype going to the young kids, not so much to the older guys. How do they feel about it? Are they at peace with what that dynamic is like?
The dynamic is pretty cool, actually, between the young players and these older guys, just because they know what it's about. They know it's about their development. And you can see the banter, the jokes between all of them, and then pulling them aside here and there and saying, like, hey, you need to play harder, or saying, hey, you know, this is where you need to be off the ball defensively, little things like that. You know, I think the more interesting dynamic is with the guys who are kind of in their 20s, still trying to prove themselves. You know, I mean, a guy like Dante Hall, I mentioned, 23 years old, kind of sniffed the NBA. And he comes in and, you know, if he's not getting the minutes he hoped for to get that call up from the bubble, what is his reaction like? You know, head coach Brian Shaw told me that he aims to play all these guys somewhere between 18 to 24 minutes. Those four prospects are going to start alongside a veteran center, I would anticipate. But the buy-in has actually been pretty cool. Like when it's a big Jalen Green dunk or a Jonathan Kuminga assist, like the veterans are up there waving the towel. They're excited. So you do see that camaraderie with this group.
How do you expect this team, as they make their way through G League competition in that bubble in Orlando, what's the target like on them from, like, their opponents? Because I imagine a bunch of young kids who are super hyped, who are making way more money than they are. I mean, this seems like a big opportunity for everybody playing against them, too.
100%. They're certainly excited to face these guys. I mean, they want to blow them out. They want to beat them by 30. They want to beat them by 40. They want to embarrass them and say, hey, like, if you think the G League is a level where you can just kind of come in with your five-star ranking and put up numbers against us, like, think again. You know, this is a physical league and we're coming after you. I do think that a lot of other G League coaches, organizations, you know, they understand that a big driving force of this bubble is to make sure that these players get exposure and have the ability to play at least 15 to 20 games. You know, that adds more bulletin board material for these other teams, knowing, like, okay, I'm here and there are people watching me and I can maybe generate some buzz, but we're mostly here for these young kids, four of them, more or less. I don't love that, right? That's why I think it's going to end up being very valuable for scouts, just to see, like, the type of resolve that these players have, because they wouldn't see that in the college game.
So I want to zoom out here, Mike, and look at the landscape of basketball and the economy of basketball, because the level of investment that you mentioned that the NBA is putting into this, paying Jalen Green $500,000 to play 15 to 20 games ultimately in that bubble, I would imagine that the NCAA and college basketball and the power brokers in that sport, they see that as an aggressive move as well. What's your sense of the ripple effects this program might have on the college game?
Yeah, I don't think it is a huge threat to college basketball because this is really targeted toward the elite prospects. But certainly, I do think it should resonate with the powers that be in the NCAA to, hey, you guys are losing stars here. I mean, think if Zion Williamson, you know, went and played in this program and they right. didn't reap the benefits of his likeness from everything that he did for the NCAA and college basketball. You know, missing out on those type of prospects is obviously a gut punch. And, you know, I just hope that they continue to find, you know, look into ways to pay these players because that needs to happen. And it might not be until it's, you know, a Zion Williamson caliber guy that they miss out on, that they really do wake up.
So as you assess what the NBA is investing in this and you assess what the NBA's strategy and hopes might be, does it feel to you like the NBA still wants college basketball to be a part of its developmental pipeline in its developmental plan?
I think it does. I mean, college has done great things for a lot of prospects. I'm not sure, you know, we would have some of the stars that we have in today's game without college basketball. I mean, you know, Kawhi Leonard wasn't Kawhi Leonard when he left San Diego State. He was a two-year player. Paul George, a multi-year player. CJ McCollum, Damian Lillard, John Morant even.
I mean, Steph Curry. Mike.
Yeah, I buried the lead. Steph Curry. You know, all those guys, they benefited from, you know, being able to develop on their own timeline. Whereas when you go this route, it's like you better be really good in that first year. You better find a way to, you know, prove that you're a draftable player in that first year, or it's going to be a little bit more difficult.
So I want to wrap here, Mike, by just assessing what's at stake for a player like Jalen Green and what like the best and worst case scenarios could be and what that might mean for this experiment, for the G League Ignite program, and therefore for the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, I think the best case scenario for Jalen Green would be he comes out and he's ultra competitive and he's making all the right reads. His body looks better. His shot looks really good and he produces and impacts winning. And then the scouts and GMs and executives kind of look at each other and say, man, this kid should be in consideration for the number one pick. And then on the flip side, if they'd come out and just lay an egg from a competitive standpoint, from an understanding the game standpoint, they're not being held accountable, then I think teams will start looking at some of those college players and say, okay, I'd rather have some of these guys who have proven themselves at the collegiate level. And then the trickle down to the program is, what the hell have you guys been doing out there every day? That's what they would hear. It's hard to fully judge just the merits of this program given the pandemic. But certainly if Jalen Green, you know, doesn't go in the top five and people look at that as a wasted year, those players, those elite prospects are going to think twice about going that route. It's an era where players want to think differently and they want to go do their own thing. But if that starts being a hindrance to their draft stock, you know, they're going to want to go to college.
Mike Schmitz, thank you for your reporting. And thanks for reminding all of us, honestly, that we should stop late night tweeting.
Let's stop.
Coming up, how the unbelievable rise in GameStop stock is connected to the world of sports.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Here's another story I want you to know. Wall Street and the internet both caught fire yesterday with this story about GameStop, the video game retail company, and its shocking stock price. But few people may know how it all connects back to sports. It was 2 years ago in late September when a bit of news came and went without many people stopping to discuss it. Michael Jordan, the majority owner of the Charlotte Hornets, had sold a substantial part of his team to two financiers, both of whom joined him as co-owners of the team. One of them, the press release announced, was a man named Gabe Plotkin, aka the founder and chief investment officer of New York City hedge fund called Melvin Capital. Many people have been stopping to discuss Melvin Capital this week, which is kind of what happens when you're the prime target slash victim of one of the wildest stories in recent Wall Street history. So to catch you up here, Plotkin and Melvin Capital had bet vast, vast amounts of money that the stock of GameStop, the chain of video game stores, would ultimately plummet, which made logical sense, honestly. We're in a pandemic, malls are suffering, and the stock just didn't seem like it had much upside in a world where you can download new video games right to your PlayStation online. So Plotkin and Melvin Capital made it known that they were shorting shares of GameStop, meaning that if the stock plunged, they would profit, as usual. And if it dramatically surged somehow, it would be apocalyptic. But GameStop obviously would not surge. It's the place where I bought a pre-owned copy of Power Stone 2 in like 2001. How could it possibly surge? Thanks to the utter chaos of the populist internet, we now have our answer. This week, millions of small individual investors coordinating on Reddit and social media have all banded together in a stunning act of memeified coordination to boost GameStop and explicitly torture Melvin Capital by buying and buying and buying and buying and buying and buying shares of the company, collectively sending the stock soaring 1,700% since December. In NBA arena terms, this is the rare revenge of the cheap seats against the luxury boxes. It's to the point where on Monday, Plotkin actually needed a cash infusion of $2.75 billion, $750 million of which came from his mentor, Mets owner, Steve Cohen, who can spare the money. But it remains unclear if Melvin can. They finally had to bow out entirely, closing out of their GameStop position by Tuesday. And making matters even worse for Plotkin, his Charlotte Hornets just picked up a loss to the Pacers last night by 10. It's his second straight. I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.